Ahoy, authors! You're listening to the Writership Podcast, a show focused on helping indie authors master self-editing skills. So come aboard and get ready to find the treasure in your manuscript with hosts Leslie Watts and Clark Chamberlain.
Welcome to episode 95 of the Writership Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about beginning hooks. I'm Leslie Watts, here with Clark Chamberlain from The Book Editor Show. To learn more about the podcast, visit writership.com/podcast.
As you know, the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at Author Marketing Club, home of the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber tool. You know you need high-quality reviews for your books, so you should use the AMC Reviewer Grabber tool to quickly and easily locate reviewers that are ready, willing, and able to review your books for you. Become a premium member of AMC now by visiting www.authormarketingclub.com and get instant access to this tool and more.
Hey, Clark.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. Yeah, I don't even know what to say. We're off to a great start, which is interesting because you have a good quote for us today.
I do. So from Michael J. Martinez, he says, "The commonalities, though, are simple. Grab the reader and never let go. Whether you grab them with a major outburst of action or plot, an utterly compelling character, or even just a dazzling display of lyrical writing, you must absolutely seize the reader's head by the end of page one. The opener has to be intensely interesting in some way. I need to know what's going on, or I need to know this odd person, or how this dream ends, or why this beautifully wrought description of a beehive is so important. I need to know. That's the key to your opening. Create that need, and you've hooked them."
All right. And why is this important?
Because we don't have enough opportunity to wait 50 pages for the story to get good. You know, like if you just look today at how fast people move from one thing to another, on social media, you know, or YouTube videos or whatever, like, you understand that the time that someone has to maintain interest is just really small. So if you don't grab them in that first little bit, then you're not going to get them at all. And that sucks.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's hard to get to nail that opening in. So, I mean, despite the fact that lots of people do it, I guess what I mean is it's tricky to get right the first time. I don't think anybody does. In fact, I treat, you know, like the beginning of any writing, because you have a beginning hook no matter mm-hmm. what you're writing. You want to pull the reader in. And I just kind of treat, like, however I open it in the early drafts, I know that's not how it's going to open in the final draft, but it's mm-hmm. just a way to get started. I know that I have to go back and look at the elements of a compelling opening and really get in there and tweak it.
Yeah, because as you go along, you're going to find out that, you know, you might not have even started the story in the right place. You know, you might find that actually, you know, the stuff that you start when you first are writing that draft, your first draft, is actually information that you need, but really isn't where the story needs to start. It's a lot of backstory. And so then you cut all of that and you find that it's chapter five that really is the compelling opening and the compelling portion of the story that really hooks a person in and gets them excited about turning the next page.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess we should get to our story for today. So we have A Wingless Bird by Tori. It's a science fiction novel. The word count is projected to be about 100,000. We are at the very beginning. And would you like to read it for us, Clark?
Yeah, I would. So this is Wingless Bird. Mud seeped through the soles of Adam's boots as he walked, scanning the area for any signs of life. Broken and crumbling walls littered the ground beneath his feet. His two partners followed in his wake, their shadows reaching out and caressing the jutting remainders in the setting sun. His partner, Selena's voice, echoed through the ruined city of Grand Traver. Adam, we've been walking all day. No one's here, and we haven't found the building yet. He shook his head. It will be here, he said, eyeing the dirt that dulled her cloak. A wind whipped through, making the worn brown fabric flutter out behind her. That's what the rumor said. Those rumors are fake. I just know it. What kind of medical organization would put their home base here? They would be better off putting it in the center of an inhabited city. She pulled her cloak tighter to her lean frame with one hand, catching her lengthy hair in the other. Her green eyes narrowed. I just don't get the point. Adam turned fully to face her and her brother, Isaac. Isaac stood in silence beside her, watching their exchange with tired eyes. Unlike them, he only wore an ill-fitting t-shirt and old jeans, a horrible choice for the weather, if Adam had a say in things. With winter right around the corner, the temperatures were dropping fast. The UO must have a reason for it. That's why we're here. Until we figure out if these rumors are true or not, we won't know. Selena, it's better to find out than just to assume it's not existent, he grinned. Besides, it'll be fun. This makes me feel like a detective or something. She shook her head, dropping her tight hold on her hair as the wind died down. Well, detective work is boring. I don't see the thrill of wandering around in the coming dark, wind threatening to blow us off our feet, and not even a bird in sight. Almost as soon as she spoke, a crisp feathered crow flew down to perch on a protruding stump of wall. It pecked gently at the old bricks. Better check that off your list, Adam joked, spinning on his heel. Come on, let's find the UO's base and be out of here before the sun sets. No, let's go home now. We've been wandering in this city for a whole day. There's nothing here and we both know it. Stop tricking yourself. Isaac tapped her shoulder. Come on, he urged, his voice chalky as if burnt by fire. It was the first time the guy spoke in over a day. Adam almost tripped. We can walk a little longer, she grunted, shaking away her brother's touch and stalking forward. Fine, I'll walk for another hour. If we don't find it by then, I'm leaving. And they moved further out on the city's ruined grounds. It didn't take much longer before a silhouette formed on the horizon, rising above the wreckage. In 20 minutes of paranoid silence, they found the rumored building towering above them. Adam sent Selena a triumphant grin. The building looked to be an old mall, single-storied with high ceilings and a magnificent glass entryway. However, the once clear walls were tinted with a thin layer of black paint, shielding the inside from prying eyes and allowing those out in the open air to be watched. He yanked his partners against the side of the stone wall and peered through the glass. What was visible blurred into unrecognizable shapes, and he leaned his head back with a frustrated grunt. He knew the mall well. His parents had gone there for supplies. They needed to work the land all those years ago. Though since then, a lot had changed for Grand Trevere. It used to be his home, but now it lay in mountains of dust, the destruction of transportation forcing its civilians out onto the countryside. Walking into the building without knowing what, or rather who, was in there was likely to put them all to death. Shaking the thoughts away, he lifted his attention up to the high walls. Perhaps there was another way in. Adam's piercing gaze soon identified every detail on the outside. Cameras were being placed in the upper areas above the large entryway, though not yet wired fully into the walls. Hundreds of the surveillance cameras hung around the mall at one point in time. It didn't make sense for them to need replacement. The only reason that crossed his mind was that perhaps during the fall of the city, the cameras' films were damaged, which meant soon they would be up and running once again. We found the place, Selena leaned into his ear so he could hear. So let's go back and report to the others. Adam shook his head. No. He held out a hand and pointed at the cameras. Those are going to be installed soon. I know Aquila will make us come back here to survey now that we know it's here. So we should think ahead and do it now before it's too difficult. She and her brother followed his motion up to the sky where the faintest outline of a metal box could be seen. Selena had to admit she was impressed. They aren't running? Isaac asked. Not yet. Those wires are loose, he explained, inching closer to the entryway and trying to peer through yet again. Hesitant, he cupped his hands and glanced through them. The room still blurred. The paint didn't act like a tinted visor then. He grinned, exhilarated. that made things easier. If he could see through it, that meant if he couldn't see through it, that meant no one could see, no one inside could either. A sound to his left jerked him away from the glass. A pair of voices echoed through the still air as they approached. He pushed himself further against the wall, wrapping his cloak around his shoulders, gesturing with a swift motion of his head for his partners to do the same. The people came into sight, walking easily in the half-light. He begged them not to look his way, wishing he could turn him and his partners invisible. That would be awesome, if magic even existed. Adam stifled a grunt. That wish was a long shot, and focused on them again. The couple were oblivious to his presence, continuing on toward the painted glass doors. A bright blue uniform adorned their bodies, made of some thick material. At least, that's what he inferred from their conversation. They gestured at the heavy shirt, complaining. It's freezing out here, yet I'm still sweating. Why can't this meeting be outside? I'm not as worried about that, the other put in, grabbing the belt that encircled her waist. It ran several inches wide with rings, buckles, and pouches sewn into the strong leather. This might just pull my pants down, I swear. How about we stand in the back? I'd feel more comfortable then. The first speaker nodded and replied about it being not as hot, but Adam no longer listened. His stare lingered on the belt at their waist. What medical agents needed those pouches and buckles for? He nodded to himself, remembering their leader Aquila's warning from the night before that sent them out on the mission in the first place. I'm afraid the UO is doing much more than developing cures. That belt might have just proved the theory.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is a really interesting opening because we get, you know, there are a lot of points of interest. You know, things mm-hmm. that we can be curious about, like the bird mm-hmm. and the, you know, I think you mentioned this is an Earth-like place, but clearly something bad has happened. And we have this building where clearly the people are up to shenanigans. and so we have this really interesting opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the characters, you know, we know that they have a leader. So are they part of some kind of clan of the last humans that are around? Are they a rebel organization, you know, living out there trying to find out what's going on in this abandoned city? And yeah, like the fact that there doesn't seem to be animals around except for the one bird, and wondering what this is, and remembering back to a time when his parents went there to this mall. And so, yeah, so it does. It poses a lot of great questions that should keep people's interest in wondering what's actually taking place here and seeing how it all shakes out.
Right. And still my biggest concern when I was reading it was that there wasn't anything in the very, very beginning, you know, those first few paragraphs that just kind of grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me in. Mm-hmm. I was checking it like I went, you know, as I went through it and I read it a second and third time, I was, you know, I was focusing, okay, at what point does it, you know, does a big question, a question big enough to really to distract me from anything else, come up? And the point that I found was when they saw the building. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, before that, there are some interesting things. Like we said, there's, you know, there's a question about Isaac and why is Isaac's voice so scratchy, as if it had been burned, and he doesn't talk much because I'm assuming because of that, and where are we, and what are we, you know, what kind of affiliation did these people have, and all of that is interesting, but the first thing that really pulls me in is when they see the building, and that, and I check the numbers because I'm nerdy that mm-hmm. way, and it's about 38% of the way into the scene. Now, part of this is is personal preference, or, you know, like what kinds of things do attract a particular mm-hmm. reader. But at the same time, we want to make sure that even if we have, you know, lots of different points of entry for the reader, that there is at least one big draw, one big question that arises in their mind, in the mind of the reader. And that's either from a really interesting character who maybe has a strong voice or behaves really oddly, or we have a really interesting, intriguing environment, or we have a very odd situation that, mm-hmm. you know, like, whoa, what's going on there? Something topsy-turvy almost. And I had some other, what were the other things that I mentioned or that while I was thinking about this? Strange circumstances, an image, an interesting image or setting, or, in a lot of people do this, immediate stakes.
Mm-hmm.
So here, I'm not really sure what's at stake for them.
Well, yeah, because one of the things that we find in this is that they've been sent on a mission, but we don't know that it's a mission until the end. Mm-hmm. Like at the beginning of this, he mentions that his two partners followed in his wake, and they're just trying to find this building, and they're doing it off of a rumor. And so that really makes it sound like kind of, and the world that they're in, it feels like they're out maybe scavenging. Mm-hmm. Like trying to find something out there, you know, some medical building or something like that where they could scavenge supplies or something like that. But if we had a hint that this was a mission and the importance of the mission, we could have that right up front of why we can't turn back, like why we have to push on with this mission. And that could have added some additional stakes of understanding of what they're up to and the importance of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think they need to... The author needs to necessarily like lay all the cards on the table in the very beginning.
Mm-mm.
but a hint that this mission is pretty important for some yeah. reason. And again, that's just one way, one means of entry, that it could be that Adam is a really interesting character. He's making jokes and he's kind of, the contrast between his behavior and Selena's, again, is interesting, but I want it to be, like, I want the volume turned up.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. On one of these questions or one of these intriguing points, just really turn the volume up and like, shove it in our faces early.
another one that could be done here is, because, yeah, we, within this little opening here, oh, we know it's a sci-fi story. We actually don't know if it's set on Earth or a planet that's like Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's one little mention in here about that these cameras have, let's see, what's the line? During the fall of the city, the cameras' films were damaged. And so, for instance, you know, if you work with cameras or security type cameras, they actually don't run on film. You know, they are closed circuit. And they get recorded in another area, you know, on file or on old VHS tape type things or something like that. And so if we're on another place, that could have added intrigue. Like if we're on another world and we could have seen some of these other little things that are similar but different, mm-hmm. you know, like the idea that they have to use film in their security cameras or something like that. Like once we can have a cool idea that that small idea of being on another place, another time, it can pique interest to keep wondering, well, where are we? And why is this seem familiar, but is different at the same time?
Right. Some key piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that I think the scene really ends strongly with mm-hmm. the, you know, with getting up to the building, noticing the cameras, the, you know, Adam figuring out he can't see in. Well, oh, that's a relief, because then that means they can't see me either. And that would be an interesting thing either, you know, either way, if it turns out to be true or it turns out to be that he's mistaken, either way, mm-hmm. that's interesting because he has the belief now that they are not being observed. And then, you know, and then the people come up and they are so, their behavior and their dialogue in contrast to Adam and Selena's is, and Isaac is really different. Like they're just totally laid back. They're just at work, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're walking up from, you know, they're all in the same city with ruins and dust and all of that, but their reaction to it is really different. And so there's some interesting questions and it really builds to a nice mystery. So we have the other two main components of the beginning hook, which is like that you start with, you know, you leave a trail of breadcrumbs, essentially, some clues, some things that continue. You could think of them as, you know, additional little hooks. And, you know, the bird to a certain extent is a little hook. The cameras are another little hook, another little question, what's going on there, and these people and learning about the mission and all that. So I think that builds really well. And we have the promise of conflict because for whatever reason, the group that Adam belongs to is concerned about this organization that's in the building. So we do have the promise of conflict as well. We're just, I think, missing that big shiny object in the first paragraph or two that really grabs our attention.
Yeah. And jumping over to film, some of the best ones I'd give like as examples, like the Star Wars movies, pretty much any James Bond film. You know, if you watch the opening few minutes of those films, that it puts you right in the middle of something. Like it drops you right there. It's not that the Empire is driving around trying to find the rebel ship. They are right on top of the rebel ship. You know, James Bond isn't getting on the plane to fly to a mission. He's dropping out of a plane into a mission. Like these things are taking place right in the middle of their regular life. And that's what you want to do here. You know, that's how you grab someone's attention is stuff's happening. It's not that you're trying to find the building. You're right on top of the building. And now you're hiding from people that are walking past it or something like that. And that's one of those ways that you can really grab people right in the middle of action and drop them on top of it.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought because you could kind of chop that beginning and have them come up on the building. You can always talk about how long it had taken them to find it, or, you know, that they had been fighting about it, or, you know, that there had been conflict about finding it, but that they're right up there. And so we're immediately intrigued, like, what's going on with this building? Why are they looking for it? And that kind of thing in a more compelling way, I think, than they're walking around the city looking.
Because in this particular story instance, like it was one of the questions that I posed to the author at the end, because Adam has knowledge of this building that his parents used to go to this mall. So the question is, do they know that the medical facility is in the mall, or is it they don't know where the facility is at in the place and it just so happens to be in the mall, which he then remembers? You know, and why, how is it that they can identify that that is the building that they're looking for? So, you know, some of these types of things are questions, you know, of why is it taking them all day to wander around and find this place and things like that. And so instead of having those types of questions in my mind when I'm finished reading it, no, we're just right there and we're right in the middle. And then we can question what it is that they're doing and, you know, exactly. And you can come back and argue about other things. Hey, we've been out doing this all day. It's time to go. No, I want to just watch for a little bit more or something along those lines. And it can just add all these additional questions to what it is that's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, that's a good point about the mall and would he know where it was and all of that. Yeah. So some interesting stuff.
Yeah. And there's another little good little line here because that reads, "It used to be his home, but now it laid in mountains of dust, the destruction of transportation forcing its civilians out onto the countryside." And so, you know, that idea of, well, what's transpired here? And I do like the type of stuff where, you know, you're like, what would cause a city to fall apart? And why would everyone have to take off, you know? And so what is this transportation that's being destroyed, you know, that's caused everyone to force to live in the countryside now? So there are some really awesome things in here that make me wonder what this world's about, and that would make me want to find out what it's about. So, and to keep moving, but having it up earlier in that first page. And it really is, like if you're an indie author and you're taking advantage of the Kindle Unlimited, you know, that someone sits down, remember that the idea is, oh, it's Netflix for books, but it's really not Netflix for books, because Netflix is this passive thing that someone can do and they can just flip to the next one really quick. And when you get them into a book, you know, like you have one page to hook them. And if you're not getting more than that as an indie author, you're not getting paid anything. And so that's why this becomes more and more important, to really understand where your story is and to kick it off hard on the first page.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, that's, of course, that's the decision point for purchasing too, is that they have, they can get a sample with the first 10% of the book. And so as much as you don't want to admit that you judge, you know, like that first impressions do matter, they do. And some people will read on, but you don't want to count on that. I had one other thing that I was going to say, that the beginning of what you said reminded me, and then it's
gone.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's gone. No. It wasn't you. It was, I clearly didn't write it down, which I should have.
If I have one other thing with this, though, like, sure. If you find that you can't have your protagonist starting off in something that's interesting, you know, that you're like, I've got to establish their normal, boring life. And having them in this normal, boring life is not going to engage people on page one. It's just not going to work. Don't forget that you can do things like prologues. You can do different points of view in your first few chapters where you have maybe the antagonist taking part in something. Something else is taking place before the introduction of the protagonist comes along in their normal life. So.
Yeah. And what I know about this is, you know, we have the synopsis from the author, and that she mentions the protagonist is Anton. And so, which obviously is different from Adam. And I don't know if that represents a change in the character's name in the process, because that sometimes happens, or if we're not even talking about we're not even seeing the protagonist yet. So it's possible that this scene is setting up something, you know, setting up for the protagonist who will be revealed at some point. And I remembered what I was going to say.
Excellent.
Yay. Which is, I wanted to say kudos to the author for not, like, there's no info dump in here, right? There's no, she's not giving us too much. She's withholding plenty of, you know, to leave us questions and things to, you know, things to find out later. We're not getting the endless description about the place and the, you know, how it used to be. And we're just getting little hints, little images. And I think that's really great, because it would be really easy, really tempting to just go, you know, just say, okay, now let me tell you about all the stuff that's going on in this scene that, you know, is kind of in the background. But
yeah.
But the author quite deftly avoids that trap.
That's all I had on this one. Those were my last ideas. But that's a really good point, though, is being able to introducing a new world. It's very tempting to just tell everyone everything. And yeah, holding back is fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, and that was my last thing I wanted to mention. So we have a little editorial mission.
Excellent.
For the week.
Excellent.
And it's called Hook 'em, which is like, I went to the University of Texas, which is, you know, they say hook 'em horns and all of that. But that is not what we're talking about right now. We're not talking about cow horns. We're talking about checking your first lines and the opening paragraphs of your story and asking yourself, have you raised a question in the reader's mind with an intriguing character who has maybe a strong voice, so strange circumstances, an interesting image or setting, or some immediate stakes, like some, as I said, some shiny object that grabs the reader and doesn't let them go. And once you have that piece, then look to see if you have created a trail of clues or breadcrumbs or additional little hooks and questions to keep pulling the reader forward. And then finally, have you promised conflict? Does the reader know from the very opening scene that there's going to be plenty of conflict and a little bit about the nature of it? So as a reminder, you can go to writership.com/episodes to sign up and get the editorial missions delivered right to your inbox. If you usually listen to the podcast while you're on the go, this can be a great solution so that you remember to follow up and do the missions.
And the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at the Author Marketing Club, which you can find at www.authormarketingclub.com. Don't forget, when you become a premium member today, you'll gain access to the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber tool.
If you enjoyed the show and you find it helpful, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. We recently had a listener wrote and said, I'm having trouble figuring out how to do this. So I worked through some instructions with screenshots so that you can, you know, so that if you're finding that challenging, which iTunes can be a little inscrutable sometimes, then yeah, we have instructions. So if you're wanting to do that, but that's been a barrier in the past, we've got you covered. So yeah, leave us a rating and review. And if you want to have your five pages reviewed on the podcast, you can send or you can visit writership.com/submissions. And finally, be sure to check out episodes of the Book Editor Show, which Clark hosts with Peter Turley. That's it for episode 95. We'll see you next time on the Writership Podcast.
Ready for Leslie and Clark to help you find the treasure in your manuscript? Submit your pages to writership.org/podcast.